Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
Osiris.
Okay, island hoppers and archipelago enthusiasts, welcome back to the podcast where we examine islander life in 1998. If your islands are long and road, that is, and if you happen to be a fan of the band Fish, I am. In fact, I write lyrics for them now and then. I'm Tom Marshall, and you are listening to another glorious episode of Undermine. This season on Undermine, we examine the shows that led up to 1997, and then we revisited every show from the fall of 1997 in the Fish Destroys America tour. And now we're looking at the four shows that happened immediately after 1997 that kind of served as a punctuation mark on the era, the Island Tour. The past two episodes featured Long Island's Nassau Coliseum on April 2nd and 3rd, 1998. And today we're island hopping over to Rhode Island for the final two nights of what was then a surprise four-night bonus run that Fish booked last minute so that they could get some more playtime before recording their next studio album. Benji, one word answer. What was that studio album?
Ghost.
Yes. They were in search of inspiration and also an outlet for their inspired playing. They kept it going, and we were along for the ride. My companions on this ride today are my Undermine co-hosts and fellow producers, RJB and Benji Eisen. Do you guys remember Jumping Islands?
Well, I do. I did it the proper way, of course, which is by boat. That's right. I took a ferry from Long Island to Rhode Island. I was with my tour buddy, Jason Melham, and you know our whole crew at the time. And apparently, I made some friends on the ferry ride because years later, someone reintroduced themselves to me as one of those ferry mates. While I'm one of those, you know, it's all about the music guys, but sometimes it's actually all about the boat. You know, I don't woo, but I ahoy. So Tom, I guess that's a setting sail. I hit a whale to you. How did you get from Nassau to Providence?
I wish on a boat ride. I mean, I want a ferry mate. Who doesn't? They sound lovely. I don't think I even considered the boat ride because I had a caravan of friends with cars available but I even ditched them and opted at that time to jump on the band bus. Because at the time, I kind of had an open invite from Trey, come on the bus whenever you can. And I was definitely going to Rhode Island. So I jumped on. And if I'm remembering right, we had a police escort out of the lot. And that's the kind of thing when Brad says to me, Tom, if you want to ride on the bus, you have to get on before the last member is on. And then we both, because we're not going to wait for you, right? And so we both look at each other and we both say at the same time, Fishman. He is the last band member on the bus. So he said, yep, just watch Fish. And when he gets on, you get on. So the bus is ready right after encore. The door is open. The bus is running and the band basically has to jump on because the cops are holding up all the traffic so the bus can get through the lots before the roads all jam up. And the only time they need to do this is when the band's playing the next day. You know, there's no day off between shows. So that was fun. That was kind of cool. Trey is sometimes like has the PA on and like yells things at the crowd and the cops, the motorcycles escorting us. So it's kind of a guilty pleasure thinking of all the traffic snarl that it's creating. But the bus ride was short, I think 3 hours. And I think we stayed in the Westin. All my pals the next day were checking into the Hilton. I think that's right next to the Civic Center. But I think we were in a Westin. Anyway, that doesn't matter. RJ, how about you?
I don't remember, but I think that we drove, I would assume, from from Nassau Coliseum to Providence. And this was great. I mean, it was great to be in Providence, you know, just one or two or three or four years removed from the Providence Bowie. I think four, actually. But based on contractual obligations, this 4498 show had to open with Tweezer. We knew that that was going to happen because it closed they closed the show before with Tweezer Reprise. So they didn't want to get fines and pies in the face from Wooks. So they had to open with Tweezer. But this, I think, was my only backstage experience of the 1.0 era. And Tom and Benji, you guys have talked throughout this season about running into each other at shows. And I never ran into either of you at any show until, you know, recently. But somehow, I think maybe at Waterwheel or Greenpeace or something, we bought a signed copy of a book. I guess maybe it was the Fish book out then in early 98?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. It, anyway.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right because that was 97 was the tour where Richard was on with the band. And Tom, you were seeing him a lot at that point.
Yep.
So yeah. We got a signed book and like, I think it was signed by all four band members. I don't have it anymore. I have no idea what happened to it, but it got us backstage. And so we were in a bar area after the show and it was not the same area where Tom, you were, I don't think, because there was nobody there except Mike and Mike was talking to a group of us and we were just listening to Mike talk. And someone was telling him about, I think we were talking about the lights at the show. And he started talking about how he thought it would be cool if there was a tennis ball launcher like they have at tennis courts, like in the back of the arena that launched tennis balls like throughout the show toward the stage. And that would be a really good like addition to the light show and the experience for fans. And my friend and I just kind of stood there and we were like, what the hell is happening? So I think that's like pretty on par with that.
Sounds like Mike.
It does sound like Mike.
But I thought that was backstage, but I think that was the pre-backstage area.
Yeah, there's backstage and then there's backstage. You were backstage.
Yeah, layers.
Exactly.
Layers.
Exactly. We were definitely in the first layer.
Security layers.
Yeah. So should we get into the show? Should we talk about the show?
Okay.
So, okay. There have been 10 Tweezer openers all time. This was only the third and the other two were in fall 97. And it's kind of amazing because it does happen obviously several times after this, but it was kind of a new thing. And it's just, I feel like they brought the energy from the previous two nights with them to this new venue. And, you know, this Tweezer is really great. I think this show is slightly kind of overlooked in the four show run, but I don't know, we can get into that, but Trey kind of gets into this effect laden sound that sounds a little bit like 11/17/97 and other fall 97 shows. And then there's this great peak toward the end and then right into Taste, which I think is a great song, especially in this era. And I don't know, this Tweezer Taste, I remember getting the tapes after getting home and This was probably the set that I listened to the most, but it's probably because I'm a Tweezer person. What's your take on this set?
Well, I'm a Tweezer person too. So set opens with Tweezer, Taste, blah, 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 limb by limb. you know, despite my jade shade, it's a fantastic first set. And RJ, I think you just said something that triggered something in my mind. And that's that we haven't talked about I guess now's the time to talk about it. They change venues, but this is undeniably one big four-night run. And I think, you know, as we talked about it just a few minutes ago, how we all get up there by boat or by bus or by car, you know, we all made it. And so there kind of was this mass migration, and that's kind of cool too. And then to open with Tweezer releasing all that energy, it's pretty cool. You know, and you know, you're not going to find a single set of the Island Tour that doesn't have Fantastic as its baseline. Some of the sets get that designation, I think, more for their jamming, and then others, the first sets get it more for their execution, I think. And this set would be the latter. It's a three highlight set with a Tweezer that bears repeating repeatedly. The Taste gets after it, and the limb by limb, it gallops to its peak. Tom, you know, I don't think we've talked about limb by limb yet. It was less than a year old at the time, which probably contributed to some of the excitement that night in Providence. But, you know, to this day, 25 years later, I still get excited when they play the song. Did you write it as a conversation from two narrators? Or was it, was the duet that happens between Paige and Trey a musical decision that came in later?
No, we wrote it that way. So you can hear it actually, the very first version of this on Trampled by Lambs and Pecked by the Dove. That came out actually in 2000. So after this tour, well after, but it contains all the songs. Well, a lot of the songs that eventually wound up on Ghost and Farmhouse. And this is one of them. But so the lyrics were created separately previously during a work day. It was one of those, it was written as a conversation via interoffice email with my pal at AT&T, Scott Herman. And I think we didn't write it like line by line the way that the song goes, but I think I wrote the entire first part, the whole never stanza, never want my hand cut off, never want a hacking cough. And then I sent it to Scott, and then he wrote the always stanza back to me, always give me what I lack, always take the best parts back. And so we took turns, and I think we wrote four of those. But then when Trey and I sang it for the demo, I think he sang the first line, never want my hand cut off, because he doesn't want his hand cut off. And then I answered, and it was just sort of a natural thing, and we recorded it that way. And then Paige, of course, took my part he took my singing part for Fish. But I think that was a hardball question, right, Benji?
Absolutely. Only the hardest.
That was like
only the hardest on Undermine.
That was a sidearm slider or something. I talked over the Character Zero set closer. And do you know what that means? It means it's set break. You would have blah, blah, blah over it, any Benji.
That's right.
Just like you did Bouncing Around the Room, Funky Bitch, Kinsey yeah. Sullivan. So anyway, our set breaks are just 1 minute or so, and we have to check out our sponsors. So just hang out.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com, that's distrokid with a capital K, .com/VIP/undermine for a special offer only for our listeners. That's distrokid, capital K, .com/VIP/undermine. Thanks, DistroKid.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
Welcome back to Undermine, where we are currently out to lunch on island tour. As the Eagles sang, she came from Providence, one in Rhode Island.
Tom, couldn't you have picked a better song that references islands or Providence?
Well, it turns out you handpicked that one for me. love or hate the Eagles, Don Henley's voice is kind of amazing. That's all I can say.
Well, I handpicked it, but what can I say? There's a writer's strike, and Undermine is still, for the time being, freeform and ChatGPT free. But at least by mentioning ChatGPT, we're current, right? And by being 100% human, we're so very 1998 right now, or 97 by some people's accounting, since fish years go until the end of April, apparently.
Wow, it's true.
Facts.
Don't let facts get in the way of your reporting.
No. All right. So speaking of Eagles, and we're not speaking of Eagles. All right. So we get the second Birds of a Feather in three shows to open set two. And this one is really, really awesome. This picks up on some of the kind of darker themes of the past two nights. Lots of these like swirling effects from Paige with Trey, just on the little riffs that are sort of like the twist and the roses from the past couple nights. But this, the Birds of a Feather comes to life here, and it's a pretty great second. And the second time in three nights is rare to hear any song from Fish, but this one loved it. It was great.
You know, when I said that the first two Birds of a Feather of an Eagle were the best two for many years, I meant more this one than the debut. You know, two nights earlier, as you just mentioned, RJ. As usual, the debut was kind of like a beta test or like a live demo that just happened to be a very strong one. But and I think we all immediately recognized the potential for the song. But this version, the second one that they ever did, for years, it was kind of the version. You know, it's the only repeat of the Island Tour. And they did a no-repeat New Year's Eve run just before this. But it's worth noting that I think one of the things that made both of these consecutive four-night runs so exciting was that in 97 and 98, four shows without a repeat or with just one repeat, you know, was a rare treat. I'm getting away from the birds. The 4-2-1. I'm sorry. The 4-2-1. The April 2nd one peaked, and here 2 nights later, this show doesn't really have many actual like peaks, despite having many highlights. By peak, I just mean Apex jamming. You know, it's the highlights are more in the groove and the improvisational textures that they form, and the places and the spaces that they go with them. And I think that these, you know, as we've talked about, these 4 nights on the islands were kind of the punctuation mark on the Cal Funk era. So this one doesn't peak per se, but it stretches for 15 minutes, goes to some really cool places and gets into some really neat rhythmic stuff. And then after this performance of it, the song immediately makes it into a very heavy rotation. But it would be another year before we saw any that would come close to the inventiveness that I think we see here with this one.
So did you like it?
Yes, I liked it.
I liked it. Yeah, very much.
I think this is the most interesting set of the run song-wise. Because I think that throwing in The Brother, which is the longest version played to this point in 98 and to this point in 2023. Mm. But after like a dark and fun and funky 2001. And I was thinking about it when I was listening back to this 2001, they'd been playing it pretty consistently since 93, but it kind of like came of age during this era of 97, 98. It fits perfectly with where the style of play was going. Of course it's the cover of like the 70s, you know, version of the song, but they kind of came together. They kept playing the song over time, and eventually the music they were playing and the style of the song like fit together. I feel like this, you know, through 98 and 99, especially, they're just these like long, ambient, funky 2001s. It's just such a great, great thing to throw in a set. And then we get another radio-friendly version of Brother, and then we get a radio-unfriendly song, which is Ghost, which again is another, you know, you get some kind of major key jamming here, and it hits this, some nice like bliss points. But this this set's really cool. I think it's a fun set, well-constructed song-wise.
You know, to me, I agree. And to me, the story of this Ghost is it's a callback to the December 29th, you know, just a few shows earlier, Can't Turn You Loose, the antics from that jam there. The band does it again here, and that's of note because throughout these 4 nights, there seems to be a number of those callbacks to that New Year's Eve run. There are 3 months in between the two runs, but they were consecutive runs. So that means that this is the second time in 6 shows that they do a full band tease of Can't Turn You Loose. So that means they are feeling the vibe, and you know, perhaps they went from watching that James Brown film to popping a Blues Brothers tape into the VCR on the tour bus, because that's where Can't Turn You Loose comes from, of course.
And then, see, I feel like we're kind of glossing over this show a little bit, but this is how I feel about this show. You have a Bowie closer and a Hood encore, and you know, so in this, just in this set, you got a great Ghost. You have this jammed out Birds of a Feather, 2001 Bowie, and then you get the Hood encore that we were all waiting for, you know, for several nights. And it's a good one.
Yeah, I think what you're getting at too, RJ, is that the show has a 1994 problem. I don't like using the word problem because it's really not a problem at all. But RJ, I remember, you know, a few episodes back, a few shows back, you expressed a curiosity about the December 29th show being kept in a trophy case on the top shelf in fans' memories Whereas, you know, 12:30, I think you felt was a little bit more, you understood. And I postulated that I think some of that was because it was such a classic peak era Phish set list, you know? And so you have a late set Lizards here and then closing with Bowie and a Hood encore. It's that same muscle memory excitement from the 94, 90, you know, from those set lists that a lot of us, you know, saw in person. And I think here, all three of these were real, were the Bowie, the Hood, the Lizards. They were well executed, but if not all-timers in and of themselves. You know, you don't need to go back and listen to them. You know, but yet they, but when you do, they hold up. I do have to wonder, I wondered it at the time and I still wonder it now, if that David Bowie was an intentional nod to the untouchable Providence Bowie of 94 that we mentioned at the top of this program, because that Bowie really is untouchable. And you know, you say Providence Bowie, immediately everybody knows it's iconic. And, you know, I think when they walk in that room, you know, I think they have to feel that memory, right? Or do you think that they nod to those sort of moments by playing the song in the same room again? Often when they do that, it's usually more of a standard version that doesn't try to compete, but it, sometimes it feels like they're trying to just acknowledge the history. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if this is like a secret or anything, but I remember when I kind of saw it, and it was probably on this tour, for the first time, Trey in the morning, like, will construct the set list or at least come up with like a bunch of songs that can be potentially in the set list. I think he talks to Paige about it, but I saw that he would have in front of him on the morning of the show, when he's coming up with those songs, a set list from the last time they played there, which I thought was kind of like, I don't know if it was like cheating or something, but also there were like special notes. And I was wondering if it was maybe from Brad or Kevin Shapiro, their archivist, reminding Trey about any kind of special occurrence, either currently or in the past, that he should take into consideration. You know, the anniversary of a famous rocker or something, you know, suggestions of a song to play to honor someone, perhaps. So it's quite conceivable to me that Trey had in his head any kind of magic that they had performed at that arena in the past. And that may have included a note from Kevin about that 94 Bowie. Remember that you crushed it here. Not that they, you know, not that he would have forgotten. And yet that's the kind of thing I remember seeing and being sort of a little bit surprised and, you know, it's a cool little feature.
Yeah, that's super cool. I hope that they keep doing that, or I hope that they've continued to do that, because it's really cool.
Yeah. And I think nowadays you'll see like you know, of course, the Shoreline shows when Tahoe was moved, like there are moments when I think they're channeling that, like, we are really going to bring something.
Self-referencing.
That's really interesting. I mean, this was they played one show in between the Providence Bowie show and this one in this venue. And at that show in 95, they did not play Bowie. So this is the first Bowie in this building since the Providence Bowie of 94. So maybe, I mean, it was like everything on this tour, great.
No other bands covered it in between Phish playing it?
Well, yeah, there were a lot, but I that's in the notes. I'll have to go to the show notes for that.
You know, well, I also wonder if the Bowie was a nod to, I think that David Bowie recorded part of a live album in the Providence Civic Center. And I wonder if Trey knew that. It was, I believe, stage. A part of stage may have been recorded there.
I don't know anything about that.
Right?
That sounds amazing.
Yeah,
that
sounds totally made up
yeah.
and awesome. I just want to say,
ask ChatGPT.
Oh my god, we can't do that. If I would ask ChatGPT anything, it would be, how do I end up coming to these recordings on time? That's my only thing. That's my only question for AI. Guys, I do have interesting news for you guys, which I think is, you know, coming from a statistics perspective. I'm pretty sure that Phish has not played David Bowie at the Providence Civic Center again since this night in 1998. They played several shows since then, but so we're waiting for the return of the Providence Bowie, but I guess they have to return to Providence first. So Benji, this show is rated 20th of all time on Phish.net. I go back and forth between whether it's slightly overlooked or if it's appropriately rated. So is it overrated, underrated, or appropriately rated at number 20 all time?
Well, this is undermine, so I'm going with underrated. Although, you know, I don't know if I'd put it in top 20, but it's underrated in relation to the three shows around it. It has a three's a crowd predicament, as it is sandwiched between what is arguably the best show of 1997, even though it is 1998, which happened the night before, and then the following night, which is tomorrow night for our listeners. So therefore, I can't say anything about it except that, you know, if you like what we're saying today, you'll love what we have to say tomorrow. So come back. But seriously, RJ, there is something special about this show, and I'm sure we all knew it at the time, but then over time it kind of got lost in the shadow of these two giants that are on either side of them. So, you know, underrated, undermine, as opposed to overrated, bug.
Overrated. Yeah. Overrated. Benji, sometimes your opinions are overrated.
I'm sure.
Underrated too, though, as often, I think.
And underlooked.
But you're kind of leaving out show one.
That's right. And show one was not only phenomenal. See, right there is what makes the Island Tour the Island Tour. You get a group of Sid's, you know, tour buddies in the room, and you get four answers amongst the Sid's people as to which night was the best. And each night will have somebody that trumpets it as being the best of the run.
Two and four are kind of like acknowledged,
yeah,
overwhelmingly, right?
Two and four are the big one. For me, if I'm using myself as a litmus test, if I go back to the Island Tour, I'm almost definitely going to 4-3 set two, or the second set of tomorrow night.
Nice. All right. Well, we have one more show to recap, as you can hear us discussing tomorrow, and that's 4598 from Providence, Rhode Island. Again, and if you want to take off, but if not, we have a lot more scintillating discussion then. Undermine is brought to you by Osiris Media. Executive producers are Tom Marshall, RJB, and Benji Eisen. Edited by Eric Limarenko. Mixed and mastered by Matt Dwyer. Production assistance from Nick Sejas. Original music by Amar Sastry. And art by Mark Dowd.
Osiris.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the head-banging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today, such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.